Welcome. You're listening to the Internet Advisor Podcast. I'm your host, Foster Brown. Along with my co-host, Gary Baker, and our team of experts, we've been helping people like you since 1998 with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources, and promoting tech enterprises throughout Michigan. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour radio program recorded weekly at WJR in Detroit. During the spring and summer of 2015, only the second hour of our show, which features listeners' questions, is heard live each week from 5 to 6 p.m. every Saturday on WJR 760 AM in Detroit. However, both hours of this show are available each week on this podcast and are available to all of our affiliates across the state of Michigan. And now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor Podcast.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Well, hello there. This is Gary Baker. Foster Brown has the day off, actually, unexpectedly, but he's off today. I have Ed Riddell and Cal Carson in the studio. Guys, we got a good show today.
All my life I wanted to have an unexpected day off, and I hope one comes one day when I can, you know, just sit on the back porch and watch the tea. But it's going to be a great show today, right, Ed?
I can't wait. I'd rather be outside, but I'm here for our listeners.
And we'll be right back. Well, welcome back. We've got a great show for you today. Even though Foster's not here, this is Gary Baker, Ed Riddell. Ed, great to have you here.
Oh, man, it's always great to be here. Sun's shining. What is it, Memorial Day weekend?
Yeah, it's going to be a good time, Cal. Cal Carson's with us here.
You know, it works so much better when you hit the button and it turns the mic on. But yeah, it's really great to be here today. I mean, despite the fact that it's wonderful outside and we're inside, but it's going to be great. We're going to have a good show. I know that. Well, I can feel it.
It has me thinking about summer.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And about being outside. Well, and so what are you going to do with all your electronics?
Oh, well, and Emily Hay is also here. She's on the phone, but she may be outside. Emily, welcome to join us today.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for having me on. Hi, guys. And I am also sitting indoors, but I'm happy about it because it's the Internet Advisor show.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, thank you for joining us, especially because Foster did have a small emergency, so he's not going to be able to join us. So we're glad that you could. And
thanks.
Cal, you're full of stories today.
I've got to ask first before I go any further because I don't get a chance to talk to Emily that much. Emily, how is the little cherub doing?
Oh, you're so sweet, Cal. Thank you. Little Ainsley's good. We hit the one-year mark. I don't know if I've been on since she turned one. I think so, maybe. So she's one, and she's doing great. We're almost walking, so I'll make sure that you guys get the update. Thank you.
Oh, but I bet she's talking.
But all she says is dad, 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 dad all the time.
He's got to love that. So that's yeah. Great. So, Cal, other questions? Because I know you were just like, full questions on the way in today.
I'm full of something, so, for sure. But I was just thinking on the way in today, and I said to myself, wow, you know, it's Memorial Day weekend. That means it's the beginning of summer. It's like, wow. I mean, I'm so glad it finally got here. And then, you know, with the beginning of summer, of course, folks are going up to the cottage. They're going away on trips. They're doing all sorts of things. And when you go and leave to go do some things, of course, you're going to take your technology with you. You got your laptops, you got your tablets, you got your phones. And that also means you have to take all the accessories that are necessary to go along with it. And I started going down the list in my head saying, well, what all would I have to take with me? Well, you know, extra USB cables, because God only knows the kids are going to go like, I lost my cable. I can't charge my phone.
Right.
So you want to take extra cables that match all the different phones that you have, because someone has an Android, someone has an Apple phone, someone has an Apple phone that's an old Apple phone, someone has an Apple phone that's a new Apple phone. Mm. So you have to have all the appropriate cables to take along with you as well. You want to take the chargers to go with those cables, because without the chargers, the cables might as well stay home too. So you're going to have all the appropriate cables for all those different things. And then I thought to myself, wow, if I'm going up to the cottage and I'm going to have to be able to charge all these things, and I'm going to need the adapters, and I'm going to need the cables. Maybe I just only need the cables, and what I'll take with me is one of those really nice 120-volt wall plates or wall sockets that you put in the wall, you know, and all you have to do is stop by like Home Depot or Lowe's or any electrical supply place, and you can buy them. They're $15-$20, and on them you can actually plug in your USB devices and charge them right on the wall.
Wait, so instead of basically plugging into the two vertical smiley faces, which we know as electrical outlets, and you know, you're saying that it not only provides two electrical outlets, but it also provides USB ports?
You can get the ones that go right on top of the outlets like that that you can plug in. Me personally, I say just get rid of that. Let's fix it. Take out that wall, two smiley faces in the wall, and replace it with the two smiley faces with the USB already built in.
You know, and then you light up the barbecue, and you can have that brewski.
Yeah.
And with a sense of accomplishment.
Well, you know, and I think best practice is if the kids forget their chargers, oh well.
Yeah, right? You know, I was thinking along those lines,
boy,
too.
This would that is be a nice holiday to get my kids to look up once in a while.
You know, how much whining can you put up with, Gary?
Yeah, well, you know, they can't whine if they forgot it. So, but my kids are a little older, so they take charge and have to be responsible for their own stuff. So.
You know, but that's a good point. You know, updating that facility that you go to, or, you know, if you have a cottage. I know we rent a cottage, and we share it with all my wife's brothers and sisters. And that thing was probably built during right after World War II, so it's all wood, you know. And it's probably you could probably just bump, you know, take a football stance and knock the thing over. But I'm sure the electrical could be used to be upgraded.
Yeah, Emily, so if people are used to you being on Facebook all the time and you're going on vacation, is there like a I'm on vacation sign that you can put up on Facebook or on Twitter?
Because I mean,
people are used to these tweets all the time, and all of a sudden they're not getting them from you for 2 weeks. What happens then?
That's so funny. I don't know if I've ever gone dark for 2 weeks. but yeah, there should be some out of office, you know, email responder equivalent to a Facebook post. I guess you could post something on your Facebook timeline and get creative, you know, a picture of you holding a sign that says gone vacationing or something.
Yeah, but and then everybody that might want to take and steal something from your house will know when you're coming home.
Okay, see, that is the reason why you just don't tell people where you're going. You're right.
That's, you just that's, go dark, right?
But you just have to go dark.
Yeah, but do you really ever do that? I mean, everybody and their mother constantly is in, you know, unless you're out in the very, very deep woods somewhere or over at Ed's house, you always have internet
Same
of
thing.
Some sort all the time. And uh-huh. And because of that, do you ever actually stop communicating for social media?
Yeah, probably not. But again, I really have been conservative as my own personal approach to not ever getting into this is exactly where I am at this moment and for how long I will be there. I don't tend to check in at the airport and things like that.
Yes, a lot of people do. Hey, music's on, so that means we're getting ready to take a break. We're going to come back after this break and talk a little more to Emily Hay from Hey There Multimedia.
And welcome back to the Internet Advisor. I'm Ed Riddell here with Kyle Carson and Emily Hay and Gary Baker. So, Gary,
it wasn't, hey there, multimedia, I made a mistake. It's social media, because that's your expertise, right, Emily?
Oh, gosh, no problem at all. Yes, that is us. Hey there, social media.
Yeah, but social media has multimedia in it. It has, videos.
Yeah.
It has communication and text.
It
has
it
pictures. It all counts, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So, with that in mind, one other thing. What were you going to say, Ed?
I'm sorry. I was reading my messages.
Did you get all your messages?
I, you know, someone wants to know if I want to play euchre tonight. I'm here at the show, you know. So.
See, yeah. Once again, like I said, you never ever are offline. You never go dark.
Yeah.
Never, ever.
You know, but one of the things for vacations, one thing that I've learned from being in Boy Scouts in that summertime is you always carry Ziploc bags for you. So when you're on vacation, you never know when that impromptu canoe trip or inner tube trip is going to happen. And you want to have your phone with you and you put it in a Ziploc or something like that. Right?
Yep, that's true. You want to have things like that. So take a couple extra Ziploc bags with you. It won't hurt a bit. Take some rice with you.
Because,
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good point.
I used that point last week. I actually went. I did the Cal Carson where my son last week spilled some water on his laptop, and we put it in a rice bag and put it in the refrigerator, not the freezer.
Not because, the freezer these times.
Yeah, just the refrigerator because of the reduced humidity in there.
Yep, and sometimes you get lucky and it'll just dry it right out and everything is just, you know, fun and dandy, and you go on about your business, and sometimes you're not so lucky and you end up buying a new phone.
If you can't use rice, what else would you use? Can you use kitty litter? I know we used to say that at one point. It's the clean kitty litter, not the used stuff, right?
Yeah, but the problem is that you have to use something that is absorbent but won't get all stuck up into the, you know, the headphone jacks and everything on there. So kitty litter would tend to get into things, I think, more because it goes into a dust-type state.
Well, I found that YouTube is very good for that, and usually you'll find a set of instructions that'll tell you how to disassemble the unit. Mm-hmm. And disconnect the battery if it's internal, like an iPhone.
Right.
And then you just leave it like splayed open and all, you know, the top cover, the back cover, the LCD panel, the batteries over here, and you let it sit overnight. And I've rescued a few phones and tablets doing that, you know.
So. Emily, with Ainsley, has she ever gotten a hold of your phone?
Luckily, she hasn't. But in fact, I was just going to ask you guys, I love my big, thick OtterBox cover. I mean, I know I take some flack from my husband on it, but... are most of the times that you have an accident with, you know, water hitting a device, does the cover just not work, or do you have to have a, you know, a really robust cover like an OtterBox, or what do you find?
Well, it depends on the type of cover that you have. If the cover that you have has little coverings for every one of those little input spots, your speaker, your power connection, that sort of thing, if it covers those all up and seals them up, chances are the moisture won't get into it. But if you do have those all exposed, that's where the real trouble happens. It gets inside those different ports on the device, and that's how it gets in there and creates a problem.
Right. I mean, some devices are you can upgrade them, like the Samsung S5. You can get a waterproof version of it or a water-resistant version.
Oh, interesting.
You know, now, in years past when I was young, and let's talk about kids, because I was a kid at that time, I can't tell you how many times I dove in the water with a wallet in my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what happens. That OtterBox doesn't float, does it?
Like I said, I haven't
tried it.
Well, you know, I have worked with people that do own a boat, and they do have buoyancy cases for their phones.
Oh, so you could buy those probably online, I would guess.
But I just imagine they're so bulky, because I was talking to a guy and he was into it. Skier, you know, sort of like you, Gary. And
but you don't check your email while you're skiing.
Of course, you know, and where are you going to clip the phone at anyway? But, you know, another thing you could do on a boat, it's clunky as heck, but two rubber bands, a piece of styrofoam taped on the back of your phone. If it went overboard, it would still float.
At least you'd find it, even if you did have to go dry it out and hope it worked, right?
Yeah. So, Emily, let me ask you this question. Now it's summertime coming. Obviously, sometime during this year, you're going to go traveling. You're going to pack up with the little share. You know, what do you have to carry for technology with you?
Yeah, what's your bare minimum that you would take with you?
Well, it was funny, Cal, when you were rattling off all of the gadgets, the chargers, the adapters that you need, I'm thinking, and we're not even talking about the humans that are going on this trip yet and everything you have to pack, you know, for them. But yeah, we are doing some international travel this summer. So, generally I have my international travel checklist, just making sure to contact my cell phone carrier, make sure I've got my international plan. There was one time that I went overseas and my Facebook usage just killed me. I did not realize just how much data, you know, posting on Facebook was eating up. So, I certainly make sure that that's covered. Not that that has to do with, you know, taking a child overseas, but yeah, for her, I still use my phone a lot, like the timer features. I mean, there's some apps that I personally like to use. There's one now that my daughter is just old enough to start making some kid crafts, like baby crafts at school, as I call it, at daycare. There's this really cool app called Artkive, ArtKive, that it solves the problem of parents that just have too many of their kids' art projects all over the world. So you can consolidate and have them archived digitally. So I'm just starting to learn now what technology apps I need for her. But like I said, I really couldn't be a parent without my iPhone. That might be sad to say.
You know, that is such a great idea. And what is that app again? Because I'm thinking about all those kindergarten pictures through sixth grade that we have Tupperwares filled of the original content, and it would be nice to digitally archive that. What was the name of that app again?
Sure. It's a clever name. It's called Artkive, so A-R-T, and then K-I-V-E, Artkive.
Wow, I could probably regain at least two shelves with that.
You know, I have a similar application like that. That it's an analog one. It's called Fireplace.
Oh, analog one, very nice, Cal. Yeah.
my daughter had, and this is a completely side joke, but my daughter had created a piece of art like that when she was in like second grade, gave it to me. I took it to work, hung it up like all good parents do. And about 10 years later, she comes to work for, you know, daughter day.
Yeah.
And she goes, mm-hmm. Oh, look, you have my fish. I have no idea that thing was a fish, but it was just great to have it hanging up there. But yeah, that's terrific.
Is that the one made with macaroni noodles?
No, it had no macaroni at all, and it was completely cheese-free too. But, you know, that is a great application to have, so you can, you know, store all those things because they are memories, and you're going to want to be able to look at them 50 years from now and say, yep, look what you did.
Well, the other thing that you might want to consider if you're going to go on vacation, and you may not have the ability to have wireless internet access, is you might want to try contacting your internet service provider to see if your phone can be enabled for your mobile hotspot or my hotspot, so that when you're traveling at least to your vacation place or at a friend's place, that you have internet access, and you might be able to turn it on for a month or prepay for a certain amount of data.
That's really smart.
The other good thing is, like, if you happen to be a Comcast subscriber, you can use their hotspots all over the country wherever they have Comcast service. That was easy for me to say.
So that your neighbor up there that has Comcast and what is it, Infinity or the
Xfinity
service?
If you're a customer, you can log on to their Xfinity Wi-Fi hotspot, put in your credentials, and you can use as much bandwidth as you like because it's the same bandwidth that you're using from your home.
That's a really great idea because you can do that without being on vacation, right? Just
that's
anywhere
true.
Where you go. If you don't have to find a McDonald's or a Starbucks or someplace else that has internet access, you could go down the street when you hit a hotspot, stop and use it.
You know, that does seem to be the place that you go when you're getting that breakfast and everyone's pulling out their tablets and stuff and notebooks and they have their flip-flops on and they're still brushing the sand off their knees and they're at the restaurant and everyone's checking up their social media.
Yeah, that happens a lot. So, for the people staying home, I mean, it's great time to barbecue, finally get things out going. Is there any place that you recommend to go to find some of the cool things that you might do in the springtime when you get started?
I got one cool app that I use every year this time. Well, actually, I use it all year round, and it works with my iPhone. It's called iGrill.
And it is, what does that do?
Well, what it is a thermometer that you stick into your meat, and then you turn on the app, and via Bluetooth, it's constantly giving you information back to your phone, letting you know the exact temperature of your food. And when it's And when it's the exact temperature, it beeps, you go out, you pull it out, and you bring it back in.
So I could go out and sit by the pool, if I had a pool, and not have to worry about it until it's ready to come off the grill.
Exactly.
wonderful. Hey, there's some music. That means we're going to take another commercial break. We're going to come back and talk to a guy from Grand Circus. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. My name's Cal Carson, and we're here once again, as we are every Saturday, with Ed Rudell and Gary Baker, of course. And Foster is taking a break for today, but he will be back. You can guarantee that for sure. At this time, we'd like to go to the phones and talk with Emily Hay, and she has two other people that I'd like her to introduce as well. And let's start off with that. Hey, Emily, how you doing?
Great. Thanks so much, Cal. I really appreciate that. So, again, we definitely want you guys to jump in on this conversation, and I'm excited to introduce a colleague of mine, Lisa Albert. Lisa, you're on the line, right?
Yes, I am.
How are you today?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Good. Happy Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's beautiful outside.
Yeah, hey, and thanks for jumping in so quickly. We had something else teed up with Foster gone. We decided to postpone that for a few weeks. So,
It's my pleasure.
Thanks for jumping in.
Yeah, and so, Lisa, part of the reason I thought Lisa was the perfect fit for today's conversation, of course, earlier in the show, we're talking about all things technology and all things summer-related, and what better small business to think of than a winery in Traverse City that social media is an aspect of what Lisa manages for them. There's social media marketing and there's social media management. So we thought that we could talk a little bit about this particular winery and some of the things that they're doing on social media that some of the listeners, whether they are small business owners or if they're interested in some tips and tricks for their own personal social networks, that they could glean from what Lisa's really working on.
Well, Lisa, before you even get into that, tell us where your winery is, and if you want, tell us about one of your really best wines that you do.
Oh, sure. So it's Brengman Brothers Winery. They're located on Leelanau Peninsula, which is gorgeous. If you haven't been up there, you must go. And they produce really, really some of the best wines up there. Mostly whites, a lot of Rieslings, Gewurztraminers, a lot of those sort of German wines, but some also really, really lovely red wines. And I'm a big fan. They do a really nice couple of years now, vintages of Pinot Noir. That's really spectacular.
Now, you can't send samples via Twitter or anything, can you?
No, I wish, right? Maybe that's the future of social media.
Maybe. So exactly. what do you do for them?
So like Emily mentioned, just managing their social media sites. So they're very active on Facebook and Twitter and also on the review site Yelp, which has been really important for them in terms of monitoring and responding to reviews, both positive and negative, of course.
Yes. And you work at Hay There,
yes.
Social media with Emily Hay.
Yes, absolutely. Lucky to be there.
Okay.
No, well, Lisa definitely leads the effort with Brengman Brothers. And again, she's got some cool things going for them. She completely manages the account. But again, when she and I were talking about some of the things that are going really well for them, a lot of it, it comes up again. And Lisa mentioned Yelp. So we wanted to make sure that, again, for all the small business owners that are out there and listening today, that don't think that you can opt out of being on Yelp. Remember, Yelp is that big review site, and I know it can be intimidating to think, oh, there's negative reviews floating around about my business, but maybe there are positive reviews that really deserve your time and attention to respond to people.
As long as they spell your name right, isn't kind of any kind of media good media? Maybe not, eh?
I think, too, even the negative reviews are really important to respond to because really it's showing your prospective customers that you care about what people think and the experience that they've had and that you're going to take the time to, if there was a mistake made or somebody was unhappy with their service, that you take the time to evaluate why those things happened.
So Emily, tell us a little bit more about your other guest, Derek Jeter, Derek Turner. I went to school with a Derek Jeter. Derek Turner and some of the things that he's been doing with social media.
Well, sure. So, again, Lisa knows Grand Circus quite well. Is Derek...
I'm here now.
I think he's right here.
Yeah. Oh, Derek's on the line. Okay.
This is called instant gratification on this radio station.
That is sad. I didn't realize we're literally... I didn't know how many phone lines the Internet Advisor has. This is fantastic.
You are so popular, Emily. How can we not have enough lines for you?
I certainly don't think that's the case. But, well, Derek, hi. Nice to virtually meet you. It's Emily Hay here speaking. But, yeah, by all means, fill us in. I know we reached out, and, again, Lisa, thanks for having a connection to Grand Circus. And we just wanted to have a little update and hear some cool things that are going on at Grand Circus.
Yeah, of course. Well, thank you so much for having me. I think I've been on the show once before, and
yep,
I've really enjoyed
back.
It, and I'm happy to be joining on once again.
Tell us a little bit more about Grand Circus and what it's all about.
Yeah, of course. So Grand Circus is a tech training institute. So we teach people how to become software developers. We've been around for almost 2 years now, and in addition to evening classes and more kind of recreational learning classes, we focus mainly on boot camps, so 8 weeks of intensive learning for people who want to go from, having dabbled in coding to becoming a fully employable junior software developer.
I think the first time that I met you guys over in your soon, at that time, soon to be finished office in Broderick Towers. That's an exciting place to be, right next to the Madison Building with a lot of entrepreneurs roaming the halls and the streets, right?
Exactly, yeah. And we have a co-working space that hosts about 45 local entrepreneurs, and we host meetups and different get-togethers. We're actually a Google for Entrepreneurs tech hub, so Google has partnered with us to help empower local tech entrepreneurs. So, yeah, there's a lot going on down there. If any of your listeners want to stop by before they head to a Tigers game, or right next to Comerica Park, and feel free to stop them by at 1570 Woodward.
And I can always tell the building because you've got a whale on the building?
Yeah, exactly. It's that huge mural of a whale. I like to joke that it's a mural of the famous Great Lakes whales that, that still roam.
So, I love it.
So, Derek, give me an idea of the demographic of the type of person that would come down and say, hey, I want to learn stuff about coding.
Yeah, of course. We really think of ourselves as bridging this gap. You know, there's a lot of companies downtown that are tech companies, even if, they might nominally be an insurance company. They have so much technology happening that they really are tech companies as well. And so there are these companies that are trying to grow, but it's really hard to find local software talent. You end up outsourcing a lot of it. So we want to help those companies grow, and the way that we think that we can be of service is by empowering local Detroiters to learn how to code and fill those jobs. So to answer your question, the demographics of our folks, really, I mean, if you want to talk about the range, we've had students who are 18 years old, we've had students who are 60 years old. But in general, the typical person is between 25 and 35. They're looking for a career change, and they really want to get into technology.
So if I wanted to come down there and just get a taste of what's going on, am I actually getting hired by the company, or am I just getting exposed to it like, maybe a young Padawan learner? Or tell me a little bit about how that process would work.
We cover Padawans all the way through Jedi. So we've got evening classes. We actually have an evening class twice a week in the evenings for 10 weeks starting towards the end of June. That's going to be introducing people who have never done anything with coding before to learn how to make a dynamic website. So that's happening later in June if you don't want to talk about what to do in the summer in Detroit. But then for those people who really, maybe they're not happy with their job, maybe they really want to up their skills. We've had people come in who have previously worked in customer service, call centers, or help desk, and they want to step up their IT familiarity. So for that, we actually have these 8-week, 9-to-5, Monday through Friday intensive boot camps. And we actually have one starting June 17th in Java development. And actually the application for that is closing on Wednesday. So if anybody is out there who's thinking about a career change or wants to make a change this summer, they can actually go to our website, grandcircus.co, and they can apply. And, in those boot camps, it's not just about learning how to code. We try to, help you understand how to interview in a technical interview. We try to introduce you to local companies. And we've already had about 120 students come through our boot camp program, and they find that there's a lot of employers who have already understood what a boot camp is, and they're excited to be talking to these students graduating.
Well, I think we're all scrambling to find enough developers and actually enough IT workers of all kinds, because I know we have lots of jobs that go unfilled because we just can't find the people. And when you find somebody that really wants to make a career change and wants to get in a career that's growing, expanding, they can come see you, and your graduates can come see us.
Exactly.
What does it cost for these boot camps, or is all that information detailed on your website?
It's all on the website, but I can say that the boot camp, the Java boot camp, the tuition is $5,500, which, it's basically almost the equivalent of a semester of effort in a college course crammed into 10 weeks or 8 weeks. So, check us out on our website. We have tons of information there. There's stories about what some of our students. We've had people, come in, they're working at Jiffy Lube, and they come out, and they're working for one of the tech companies downtown. So that's what we're all about. We love seeing people, they know what they want, and then they're willing to put in the work, and then we're right there to help them make that transition.
Well, thank you very much, Derek. That was wonderful. That helps not only the people that are directly looking, but a lot of people that are listening that may know somebody that needs to change a career.
Exactly.
So thank you, Derek Turner from Grand Circus, Lisa Alberts, and Emily Hay from Hey There Social Media. Thank you, guys. Really appreciate
it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Well, welcome back. It's time to talk to the mayor of Royal Oak, Jim Ellison. And it sounds like maybe we lost him. We'll come back to the mayor here in a little bit. But as soon as he joins us, we'll talk a little bit about Smart Park. It's a crowdfunding opportunity that they're playing around with in Royal Oak.
And you know, that sort of thing is really becoming more and more prevalent in cities across the United States. If I'm thinking of the same type of smart parks, they are places and green spaces where you can go and you can get technology at the same time that you're in those particular areas.
Yeah, and you know, we've got Mayor Ellison, Jim Ellison, on the line with us again. Mayor Ellison, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Hey, thank you for joining us. Foster's not able to be with us. He had a little bit of a medical emergency, and he lives right there in Royal Oak and took a personal interest in this smart park. But we are all interested because you're using crowdfunding to help make this happen. First, if you could, tell us what the smart park is, and then how did you decide to do this with crowdfunding?
It actually started accidentally. We started using that area of downtown on Center Street last summer for our weekly concert series. We did the library lawn, so we moved it over on Center Street, and we literally rolled out the green carpet, put picnic tables up there, and had the concert of the week. Well, during the week, we stored the picnic tables in this little alcove, which is right next to our parking deck. It's nothing more than sidewalks; it's a plaza to get to and from. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But we start finding out that the workers downtown were using these tables for their lunch and to catch up on their email and whatever they were doing. And it struck us as, you know, there's a need for this. Okay? But so how do we do it? And so we started talking amongst ourselves, and you know, obviously funding is going to be a problem. Someone suggested, you know, let's see what's available in crowdfunding, because that kind of, you know, the thing was starting to happen more often. So we looked into it. We actually got some cooperation from the MEDC of the Public Spaces Community Places Crowdfunding Program. And so we started up. We made a go at it. And you know, I checked it as of about 3 o'clock today, and we're already over $35,000.
Wow, that's great.
MEDC will match us dollar for dollar if we hit the $60,000 goal. So that's what we're trying to do. We're excited about this. It's something different. I'm sure any other community that's doing this, it's, you know, you see it as another amenity to our downtown. We are really striving hard to get our daytime population better, workers downtown, you know, to help our retailers, to help our restaurants, and anything like this, it's going to attract the tech-savvy people. I think it's good for us.
Well, and, you know, I guess the only other way to do this, or the old way of crowdsourcing that or crowdfunding that, before there was the internet and before you could do this on the internet, you kind of put a pail out when people wandered in. But that was after it got started. This is a way to kind of do this, you know, ahead of time, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and we started floating the ideas to some of our merchants downtown, and they're all excited about it because the park's going to include an interactive kiosk, so you know they can get advertising space, so they can put their information in, put their apps out there, so that they can interact with people in this park, and so you know they're willing to put up some money. So we're going to have participation from the merchants, participation from the residents, and you know I really think that we're going to be get this done pretty quickly.
Well, but, great. You know, yeah. Mr. Mayor, we have Jason McDonald from mm-hmm. Living Lab Design Group, who I think helped you with some of the design of how this was going to work. He's on the other line. Jason, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on.
Good. We're happy to have you. Now, have you done these kind of smart parks before, or is there something new about this one?
Well, I have to say, we've done a lot of designs for parks. None of them quite match up to what this is offering. This has a lot more technical elements to it, or technology elements, I should say. And this is pretty unique in terms of what we've worked with.
Well, tell us a little bit about some of those amenities to the smart park, how it is, and how it, you know, gives the ability to maintain that wonderful green space that we all love inside an urban setting, but yet at the same time reap technology.
Well, that was one of the important elements, is to maintain it as a green space. I just came on, so I'm not sure if the mayor told you the background of it, but it looked like a space that people really like to use. And then the city came to us and said, we'd like to implement some technology items. I know there's a strong presence of tech firms in Royal Oak. I think they were influenced by that. So we're looking at ways to implement things like an electronic kiosk, perhaps beacon technology, and it's limitless, it seems like, when we talk to the technology folks about what you can do. So we're just scratching the surface right now, but those are some of our ideas.
Is it to implement
some of the electronic kiosk, beacon ideas, things like that.
Is it the plan when you created this Spark experience for it to be a 365 park? I mean, we're in Michigan, and you know how wonderful it is in the middle of December outside. Is it planned to work all year round, or is it only seasonal?
No, absolutely. It's supposed to be year round. One of our comments was at our focus group meetings is people like the idea of actually embracing the winter. You know, we do live in Michigan. We can't turn off the cold weather, so let's embrace the winter, maybe make some winter elements like a fire pit or something like that, or the ability to enclose an area. So we definitely planned on it being a 365 park.
Now, you know, I did a quick Google search, and it was amazing how simple it was for me to find the crowdfunding. But it looks like it's patroncity.com, and you have 24 days left on this crowdfunding. And as the mayor said earlier, you already have $35,000 towards the $60,000 goal of the crowdfunding.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And I think a lot of credit goes to the city. They've really gotten the word out, and they're very, very excited about it. And you can tell by the way they're marketing it. And we're excited about it, too. I think the other site is rosmartpark.com, where you can go, and it'll link you to the Patronicity site. And I think people are behind it, so I'm hopeful this is going to happen.
Mr. Mayor, you were saying that how the businesses downtown are really behind this, and you've got such a great tech community in Royal Oak. It sounds like they're jumping on and really getting behind this as well. You know, Jason alluded to the fact that you have that you had different sessions ahead of time to plan this. How does this all work together? Do you find that the two groups are very synergistic, or do they have different ideas about what this should be like?
Well, no, we're trying to focus the park into exactly like Jason described it. You know, one of the elements that he didn't mention that I wanted to mention is we're trying to make this a sustainable park as well. And you know, we're going to have bioswales, we're going to have rain gardens, solar panels, roof gardens. We're going to have all that stuff. We're adding a slot for bicycle parking, covered bicycle parking. So we're doing all that kind of stuff to make it both environmentally friendly and technology current. And, you know, the ones who are jumping on board are the retailers and the restaurants, because, you know, they feel they've got instant communication with anybody that's in that park. And we see that the real user during the day is going to be those that work downtown. And our downtown working population is increasing, and we've got an active effort to try to recruit more businesses downtown to give us more office workers and increase our daytime population. So as I said before, I think this is going to be a great asset.
Is this designed only to work as a single park downtown, or will you have multiple smart parks, and do the parks talk to each other?
That's a great question. And I think at some point, depending on the success of this, you're right. I see this evolving into other smart parks.
And I agree. I see us in evolving the technology is, you know, maybe we have the kiosk. The kiosk can talk back and forth to each other, and we spread them around downtown. And, you know, we're able to capture a very, very small, underutilized space. And we have a number of those in town. So, you know,
Mayor Jim Ellison.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage, internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll find past podcasts, our toolkit of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, plus other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage and send us an email with the details, And don't forget, look for us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor. I'm your host, Ed Riedel. And in studio with me, we have Cal Carson and Gary Baker. This is going to be a one-hour live broadcast on our local syndicate, WJR. And we'll be taking questions and answering your questions right after we get back at 800-859-0957. Again, we look forward to your questions. We'll be right back.
Well, welcome back to the Internet Advisor Show. This is Gary Baker. I'm here with Ed Riedel and Cal Carson, and we're here to answer your questions. We've got an hour, but first, we're going to do what we do every week on the Internet Advisor Show, and that's talk to Mike Brennan, the editor of MyTechNews.com. Mike, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Great, Gary. Good talking to you.
Hey, we have you on every week because as partners, you bring an awful lot of very cool tech news to our listeners, you do that in the form of mytechnews.com. It's a website, but we all sign up for your email, and we suggest our folks sign up as well. And then they get all sorts of really news that's helpful for them. Not only does it tell them what's going on in the tech world here in Michigan and the Midwest and sometimes nationally, but it also gives them some great other information as well. Like this week, for instance, I was really intrigued by Maker Faire. And there's a couple of them that are going on here in the next few weeks or next couple months, right?
Yeah, you've got in Ann Arbor, you've got the Mini Maker Faire, which is actually aimed at kids. And it's going to be taking place on Saturday, June 6th from 10 to 4 p.m. And all that information is at my website. If you want to sign up, you can still sign up if you're a kid. I think you're a little old to sign up for that one, Gary.
I act like a kid a lot of times.
Well, that's what your wife says for sure, right?
You know, so. Absolutely.
So that's a good one. And Ann Arbor, of course, is a real hotbed for that sort of activity. Then there's a really big one coming up in Detroit at the Henry Ford on July 25th and 26th, where they're not only expecting more than 400 makers to be exhibiting, but 25,000 people to show up to see what they make.
So tell us about Maker Faire, because I'm sure that some of our listening audience has not heard of this or only heard of it, and they don't really know what to expect. Tell us a little bit about what
goes on. The Maker movement was started probably more than a decade ago, but it's really taking on legs right now. And in the beginning, it was artsy, craftsy kinds of stuff, you know, the beads and jewelry and things like that. But now it's morphed more into real hardware products. I mean, Michigan is... That's what we do well. We make things. So it's a really incredibly good fit for Michigan, where you have a lot of top-notch engineers, you have a lot of creative people making stuff, and it could be, it's just amazing what they come up with. But lately it's been, like say, focused on hardware products, some software products, but it's just all over the board. It's just amazing.
I can remember Mark Hatch, who is the president of TechShop, and TechShop is a national organization or series of tech shops around the country. They partnered with Ford to put a Maker Faire, in fact, right next to the Detroit Lions practice facility in Allen Park. And when they were launching this about 2 years ago, he was talking about a jetpack that they had one of the makers that come in. They pay $100 a month, and they have free reign of the facilities, of all the equipment that they're certified to use, and all you have to do is show up and learn how to use it. So there's some equipment that's really tough to use. You have to really learn how to use it, bandsaws and whatnot. You got to be careful because it can be dangerous. But
even CNC machines. A lot of these places have CNC machines. So it's essentially going back to our roots of being a big tool and die center. That's what really brought the auto industry to Michigan more than 100 years ago, is we were really good at tool and die, and it's kind of an offshoot of that.
So all they have to do is sign up for your email newsletter or go to your website, and they can get all the information about Maker Faire, right?
Right. Great. Absolutely.
So tell us another. I saw Comcast again was in the news. I mean, they're making news, it seems like, all the time these days. But they're talking about some of the new the kind of the new remote controls, I guess, that are out there.
Yeah, I went to a demo this week at Comcast Regional Headquarters in Plymouth, and they showed off a remote that they just, and I'm just playing around with it this weekend, where it has voice control on it. So if you depress the microphone button and aim it at your DVR, your X1 DVR, that's the thing, you've got to have one of those, X1 platform, and say the words WJR, if that's somewhere to be found on the Comcast network, it would pull it up rather than you punching that in. I don't know whether WJR would be there, but I just use that as an example. And then also they have this particular program that's involved with the X1 platform where you can share your video. You run it through your smartphone, you're out taking a video of your son who's playing baseball, and grandma in North Carolina has a X1 platform. You can take that video, run it through your smartphone, which goes through the X1 system, and then grandma can see the grandson playing baseball live in North Carolina. So it's kind of cool.
Wow, that sounds good. Yeah, not only can I got a new way of channel surfing now, but I could take and distribute my videos without actually having to go through all the trouble of posting that onto YouTube. But that's, I think, only grandma can see it, right? I have to send it to each individual person?
Yeah, it's not a broadcast situation yet. Although they said they were looking at the possibility of doing that, it's one-on-one. So you can directly send it to somebody just like you would an email or a text or something like that.
We're starting to get little nieces and nephews, grandnieces and nephews, so I can see that being a really important function in our household. Well, Mike Brennan, the editor of mytechnews.com, thank you very much. We hope to talk to you again next week.
Absolutely, Gary. Look forward to it. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. We are going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to take your calls. So stay tuned.
Well, welcome back to the Internet Advisor. My name is Cal Carson. I'm here with Ed Rudell and the fabulous Gary Baker. Foster is off for today, but he will be back next week to give us his dulcet tones to this microphone once again. I want to say thank you to Rich Lazinski, who's working behind the glass, spinning the knobs and the dials, and also to Mike Stetz, who is the gent you will be talking to on the telephone when you call in with your questions. And hey, you can call your questions in at 1-800-859-0957. That's 1-800-859-WJR. And we'll be taking questions for the next hour or so. So if you have a question you want to ask about technology, about your computer, or how do you get around on the internet or that sort of thing, please feel free to give us a call once again at 1-800-859-0957, and we'll do our best to answer those questions for you. And remember, the only question to ask that is dumb is the one that you do not ask.
That's so, almost like how Foster says
close.
It.
That's close, yeah, yes.
He says it with more enthusiasm somehow. We need Foster.
Well, let's try it again then.
Okay.
The only dumb question that... You know something? I don't know how to say that. The only dumb question is the question that you don't ask.
That's right. And ask easy ones. We always like easy ones.
Yeah,
hey,
softball.
So we had a question last week about Facebook, and we have Larry on the line who is going to help us answer that or has an answer for it. Welcome to the Internet Advisor Show, Larry.
Hi, welcome. Thank you for taking my call. What happened is last week after I heard the podcast about the Facebook question, the lady was asking why Facebook has messages that she's connected with a new device or that she's connected from a new location. And
I think that was the big thing, was that she was saying, gee, that it looks like that she was connected from a location she had never been in before, and why would that happen? And is that maybe a hacker that's using her Facebook account to get on from, Dublin, Ohio, or wherever it
would be? Is that what happened? I wasn't on the air last week. Okay, yeah, because but I'll let Larry tell us where it's at.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure what type of software they're using to track the IP address is the internet protocol address. And, but like the example that I gave in my email to Foster was I have DSL through Frontier Communications mm-hmm. out here in Lapeer County. And however they route it, sometimes it shows up that my connection is over in CAPEC or Yale or Emmett, or I've seen at St. John's, Michigan, north of Lansing, Muskegon, where I know they have a big center over there, and then also Rochester, New York. So it's just where they're headquartered. So it's wherever they're wherever you're connecting, wherever they're routing the traffic. In this case, you know, the DSL through Frontier Communications. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the other example that I gave, I am an adjunct instructor over at Baker College, Auburn Hills and Clinton Township campuses. Uh-huh. Sure. And I'll connect to Facebook from there, and their main servers are at the main campus in Flint. So it's going to show, Facebook's going to return a message to me as well that I've connected from a different location, in this case being Flint. Well, I'm not in Flint. I'm either in Auburn Hills or Clinton Township, and that's what's happening.
You know, and I seem to remember something along that. Early on with Facebook, if I ever used a public library to you know, log in, I would receive another notification that on my, I think it was my cell phone, that basically that someone is logging in. Do you wish to approve or allow this device to have access to your mm-hmm. Facebook account?
Interesting. So it has something to do with maybe the IP address that they're they're connected
well,
from?
There's a setting in Facebook that you can be notified of other connections to your Facebook account.
Okay.
And then so I receive notifications if another device is connecting. So there's that one instance. And then there's what basically Larry's saying, is that Facebook tracks the IP address of wherever the connections are and tailors advertisements to those locations.
Right.
Because occasionally on Facebook, I'll get notifications. Ed, would you please confirm if you're from Oxford or Ortonville or Lake Orion? And I'm like, I'm not going to answer their damn question. You know, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't want them to narrow it down exactly where I'm at.
So I think what Larry was saying, too, was that if it is IP address related, it's wherever that IP gateway back is and
right.
the way that traffic is routed. And the nice thing about the internet is that if it's congested, kind of on run route, it'll route your traffic a different way. So sometimes
correct.
It may connect out of the Frontier system, in your case, Larry, it's near where you are, and sometimes they route it through Frontier to route through the gateway that's maybe quite distance from you.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, less congested. And then what Ed was saying was every device has a MAC address, media access control,
right.
and that's like I got a from my wife and son for Christmas a Amazon Kindle, and when I first connected with that, then it said Facebook gave me a message as he stated, you know, you're connecting with a new device. Is this okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's what's happening there. No, the lady's not being hacked. It's just that Facebook is just giving those notices. You know.
Right. And if she is worried that maybe she is, that she continues getting notifications that another device is attempting to connect and she's receiving notification that another device is trying to access her Facebook account, the simple solution is to go onto her primary PC and go into Facebook and reset your password.
Just change it
change
to
your password.
Yep.
That would do it, yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Thank you, Larry, so much for that, for calling
You're
in.
Welcome.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. And we actually ask people, not only can they call in with questions, but in the case where Larry had heard this on the podcast, and he called in with an answer. And by doing that, it allows us to help other people as well. So we've got another caller. So because our system is down, I just heard it's Joe from Farmington Hills. Welcome to the Internet Advisor.
I think he got rerouted on Facebook.
He might have. We're gonna put him back on hold and see if he comes back. And Mike from Clinton, we would welcome you to the Internet Advisor Show. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, we can't see you, but we can hear you just fine.
There we go. See, my computer with Microsoft Outlook 2010 email received and sending was fine using Brighthouse. I changed over to AT&T. The email receive works fine. I cannot get the email sending to work.
When you
this support problem, right?
Oh, without a doubt.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. So if you go to AT&T's website, okay. And
yes, I've been there.
Okay.
Gave me three different locations in the world, including going off somewhere in Malaysia and somewhere in India.
So this we're not talking about support. Talking about the configuration of your email client.
No. I understand. They were supposed to give me help. And I would assume in regards to the configurations. So you're making the statement that I thought was true, probably, that it's their problem and I do not have to pay $150 for them to tell me to do so. Well, I think...
Hold on. Yep. Okay, let me explain how email works, because you said it worked originally with Brighthouse, and now what you're doing is you're with AT&T. Well, when you configure an email client, you need to know the incoming outgoing servers, and I assume that you found that information. And the other thing you need to do is the port numbers that those servers work on.
That's what I have to get from them, the port servers.
Okay, I got your answer for you right now.
Cal, good going.
Okay, so your incoming mail server, which is probably working for you, is pop.att.yahoo.com.
Mm-hmm.
The other one that you can use for incoming would be imap@att.yahoo.com, and that'd be running on port 993.
Well, that's not working. That's IMAP, not POP.
Okay. And he needs the port number for outgoing.
Probably 578.
Well, and it also requires authentication, too. So he has to put in a password for the outgoing as well.
Right. But what's the outgoing server? Is it the same?
He was right. I believe it's 578.
No, I mean the server name. Is the incoming and outgoing server the same?
The outgoing server should be smtp.att.yahoo.com.
Okay. And then you believe the port number would be?
What Gary just said.
I believe it's 578.
578. Okay.
If I recall correctly. And if it's not, it's one like that. So.
And simple, if it isn't.
You had it with Brighthouse, it was 25.
Right.
And they're not using that anymore.
And the simple thing to do is you can type in into your favorite search engine like Bing or Google, and you could type in the smtp.att.yahoo.com, and then you can say, what is the port number? And magically it'll appear on your browser search.
So hang on. We're going to talk to you offline and we'll make sure you get up and running. And for the rest of you, we're going to take a short break and come back and answer more of your questions. So hang on, and the Internet Advisor will be right back.
Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. I'm Ed Rudell here with Cal Carson and Gary Baker. We're here taking your questions for the next 30 minutes at 800-859-0957 or 800-859-0WJR. And we were talking to Joe in that last segment, and each one of us chimed in, and it was a little confusing. Joe was obviously a little upset about the runaround he got from the support from AT&T when he switched from Brighthouse to AT&T Yahoo.
And they should have given him instructions on where to go to set up his email correctly, right?
Correct.
Because it would have changed, and it's specific to them. I had given him a port number that Comcast actually uses, not the one that AT&T uses. So that was my mistake. But, Cal, you now have a way to get to all of those numbers, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the easiest way to do it that I have found is if he goes to att.com on the Internet, and then he'll get a screen up there, and he'll click on the support tab. And then underneath the support tab, there's one that says Internet. And then he's going to select high-speed Internet support. And they have nicely laid out there a thing called how to set up your email program. And they have email settings specifically for Outlook 2013, Outlook 2010, Outlook 2007, and for Mac OS Mail. And all you have to do is click on the appropriate icon, and it'll just walk you through the entire process all the way down the board, give you the port numbers, the whole shooting match, so you can set it up and have it going for them within a very short period of time.
And go ahead.
I was going to say that what we finally discovered and what we tried to say at the end of last hour is the actual outgoing mail server for AT&T was what, Cal?
I believe it was outbound.att.
Outbound or SMTP?
SMTP, it's almost always.
Now we're having lots of fun because they got two different ways.
How about the port number? Because that's really what he wanted.
That was port 995.
So that, Joe, if you're still listening, port 995.
Wait, that's completely different than the one you just told me a few minutes. You said 465.
All right.
My goodness. So follow his original instructions on how to navigate to the website.
Just go to the website
and do it that way.
Lose there.
Right. Okay. And because in here is complete chaos and confusion. Now, but how does he go into the email client? Well, if he's running Outlook, you go into your control panel, and when you select small icon or large icon view instead of the category view, you'll have a mail setting applet in there in the control panel. And when you click on that, that brings up the properties to configure your Outlook 2010 mail properties. So when you click mail in the control panel, he'll be able to modify the advanced settings inbound and outbound email for his Outlook 2010.
That sounds great. Let's go out to Mike. And Mike, you have a question for us. Mike, are you there?
I think I put him to sleep with all that.
Hello?
There he is. Okay. Hi, Mike.
Okay. Howdy. I've evidently, my wife's computer gotten a virus on it. And a friend of mine said, well, try AVG. And see what they can do for you. I went online with it. I was on Internet Explorer. I clicked on AVG, and my gosh, I got 30 some different things downloaded so fast. I started uninstalling, and every time I'd uninstall one, I'd get a couple more back.
Oh, no. So I'm sorry. What did you say this was? What type of computer? Is it running? Is it Windows?
It's a Dell Windows 7.
Okay. And when you were uninstalling them, were you just going into the control panel, programs and features, and trying to uninstall them there?
Yes.
Okay. You know, one thing that can happen, and you're doing the right thing by trying to uninstall them right away, but if you're online, or if the programs are actually running in the background, because it sounds like you are infected now with a number of things, you may want to try to bring your computer in safe mode. A lot of these programs will not be running while Windows is in safe mode, and you can repeat the same process you had just tried, which was going to control panel, programs and features, listing all the programs. And what I typically do is you sort all the programs by date installed. There should be a field at the top there.
Right.
Perfect.
Right. That's what I looked at. I looked at the date that was on them, and I tried taking, well, this happened on the 15th and 16th.
Well,
and so I tried taking everything off for those dates, and they just kept increasing. And then Internet Explorer kept quitting on me.
So have you tried this in safe mode?
No, I have not.
Okay, so I think that might be the key to help you with this. And have you got another computer in the house by chance?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so I would try your steps with powering up your computer, powering up the infected computer, and then tapping your F8 key function on the top row and bringing it up in safe mode. When you tap the F8, you'll be presented with the option of bringing your computer in safe mode with networking. Bring it up in safe mode. Don't even bother with the networking right now. And then repeat the process that you were trying to uninstall all those programs manually by the date installed. We're hoping there's a good chance that a lot of these are not running in the background. They won't try to reinstall. They may, though. And that's why I asked if you had another computer in the house that you can download Malwarebytes. And Malwarebytes will install in Windows Safe Mode. And you go to malwarebytes.org, or if you're not familiar with the program, you can go to the internetadvisor.net website underneath our toolkit. And in the toolkit, we have a malware uninstaller list right there, and Malwarebytes is listed there with a friendly link to download.
And you want to make sure that he looks for the free Malwarebytes, right?
Right. Well, there is only one version now.
Oh, there is. Okay.
If you try to select the other version, you're downloading the same one, but it will challenge you to enter in the license key that you've registered and paid the $25 for.
Okay.
But you can use the free version. Thank you, Gary, for doing that. And it's completely functional. And you could put that on a flash drive or a USB flash drive from the working computer. And when you can bring it over to the computer that you brought up in safe mode, plug the flash drive in, and you should be able to run it there.
download that from the flash drive into the infected computer.
Yep. Or yeah, download it onto a working computer and put it on the flash drive. You'll probably have to reboot the computer that's infected and bring it up in safe mode with networking the second time.
Okay.
And when you do that, at least when you install Malwarebytes, when you install it, one of the first things it's going to do is try to update itself with virus definitions. And if you have safe mode with networking enabled, it'll be able to download those updated definitions so that you can do a complete scan. How does that sound as sort of like a...
It's going to be a mouthful for me to do, but...
Well, the safe mode is the only thing different than you've already tried, so that should be pretty easy. The hard part, if you're not used to doing it, is using another computer, downloading Malwarebytes, and putting it on a flash drive and walking it over to the other.
So, Ed, in this
I've
case...
I've got one here, but I've never used it.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So in this case...
It's a flash drive. It's a 4 gig plugs into the USB port.
There you go.
Excellent.
Yeah. Yep.
So if you're familiar with, you can save the Malwarebytes that you download onto your desktop, and then afterwards, you're probably used to doing that, right? Downloading files and saving them to your desktop or My Documents.
Yeah.
And then you can just take that file and drag it to the flash drive. You'll open up your My Computer, and then you'll plug in the flash drive, and you'll see that the flash drive will express itself and say that it's just inserted. What would you like to do? And you select, I wish to open a file window so that I can see my flash drive. And then you drag and drop the Malwarebytes that you downloaded onto your desktop, and you drag it into that opened window.
I'll see if I can do that.
So, Ed, I think this happens to you way more than it does to me. But as I meet people throughout the week, they say, "Oh, you're on the Internet Advisor Show." Hey, and they ask me a support question, right? One guy told me that when he gets into a situation like this, he just takes and deletes or uninstalls his Internet Explorer, and then he goes and uninstalls some of the things that he had put on that Internet Explorer as plugins, and then he lets his operating system rediscover and reinstall the Internet Explorer again.
Well, that's a good point, and that can be done.
He says it's easier. I can't figure anything else out. I'll just do it because it automatically comes back, reinstalls.
Well, that's true, but these programs, he has a lot of different programs that have installed, so it would be good to run a scanner that can remove them.
Right.
It's true that when this is all done, Internet Explorer may be damaged or even become crippled, because right now there's a lot of add-ons on there. We're hoping that Malwarebytes, which is a scanner, will remove those and identify them. And in a perfect world, Internet Explorer worked just fine.
Mm-hmm.
But if not, what you're suggesting should work. You can uninstall Internet Explorer and...
Then uninstall the other things as well.
As well. And then Internet Explorer will reinstall itself afterwards.
Okay.
During the next Windows update. Great question, Joe. Okay, Mike. Thank you.
Well, thanks a lot for calling in, and we'll be back in a few minutes with more on the Internet Advisor. Well, welcome back to the Internet Advisor. I'm Cal Carson here with Gary Baker and Ed Rudell. And we want to give you some more time where you can call in and ask that question you've always wanted to ask. So call us at 1-800-859-0957. That's 1-800-859-0WJR. And I wanted to just go back and talk a little bit more about the mail settings that we were talking about earlier, because I wanted to make sure the caller had clear information. And with AT&T, if you're doing your inbound and your outbound mail and you're setting them in your mail settings, and if you go to their website and look at the various different email clients that they have out there for you to set up, you're going to select for inbound, it's going to be inbound.att.net. And the port setting for that on a POP server is 995. If it's outbound, it's going to be outbound.att.net with a port server setting of 465. And that would be your SMTP port for your outbound mail.
Remember how in the old days they used to call it, the inbound server was always called POP and the outbound was always called SMTP.
Yeah, simple
mail. They made it simpler.
Protocol.
Yeah.
Right.
They just made it simpler by calling the inbound mail server is now called inbound and the outbound is called outbound.
Now, what did you say SMTP stood for?
Simple Mail Transfer Protocol.
What does POP stand for?
Plain old.
How about point of presence?
Point of presence. Is it point of presence? I think it's something post office, but anyway. But we have some callers.
We do.
So Mark from.
I've been there for 38 years.
Great. Mark, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Thank you.
Do you have a question for us?
Yes, sir. Our computer is being held hostage.
That's not good.
Is this the hostage where the data was encrypted and they're at, asking money?
Yes.
Oh, man. That's not good.
No, and actually, unfortunately, my wife did pay them some money.
And?
And now our computer does not work. And actually, here's my wife right here, sir. She can explain it to you better.
Wow.
Oh, that's too bad.
So what's your wife's name?
We're on the line.
Yeah, they're getting all sick.
Hello, sir.
Hi.
Hello. Hi, welcome to the Internet Advisor. We just spoke to your husband, Mark. And he told us that your computer was basically got a piece of software on there that was holding it ransom.
It's as close as I can figure. It's called WizTech.
WizTech.
And about a year and a half ago, I did buy a product from them, and they helped me. But then they called me back and want to help me now with this malware bite thing. And yes, I can't do anything with my computer. And they also tried to charge to my account, my debit card, or my credit card, either one. They wanted $600. Well, I stopped it before they got it from me, but now the credit unions tried to get it back from them because they went ahead and did it for them.
So they already made these charges against your credit account, and you're working with your bank to get those revoked so you don't have to pay them. But, I mean, it sounds like your computer's in a non-functional point and that you were working with basically someone remotely, and then they pretty much wanted to, they called you again, unsolicited, and called you again, and then wanted to do some additional work for you, and demand more money. Yeah, and I think it's to the point, if your computer's not working at all right now, how old is your computer? How many years
old? Well, it's old, so as I was telling my husband, it's like 15 years old, and it's a dinosaur, and it needs to be replaced.
Oh, if it's that old, I mean,
replace it.
Think about this for a second, ma'am. For $600, you can buy a brand new computer, so it would be just a waste to put it into something like that. The other thing that I'm going to suggest you do is that if you bought the service on your credit card, correct?
Yeah, but that was a year and a half ago.
Doesn't matter.
Because they stored my information, they tried to do it again when I refused to pay for this new service that they wanted to do to get rid of the malware bites. And I'm not a wizard on the computer or anything, so I was just trying to fix it.
So she started working with her bank on trying to get it done.
So here's what I think you need to do if we can help you. I think you need to put this computer in the trash.
Well, she still has data on there, even though she doesn't have access to it. And she may want access to that. But stop using this computer and look at alternatives.
Yeah. Right. So buy another computer for half what they're asking from you.
Oh, I know. So I kept trying to sell them.
And second of all, when you have a situation like this, you don't want to give out your credit card number.
Oh, no. I'll never do that again.
Yeah. Yeah, because we're saying this from
a year and a half ago.
Yeah, see, we know that you never do it again. We're saying this so that other people, because this gives us an opportunity to warn some other people.
Yeah, I feel sorry for the people that they do, and they called me and called me and called me, and still, even after all that was said and done, and I told them never to call me again.
Well, they're not allowed to do that, but this is obviously someone that's out of country, and then we can't touch them.
Yeah.
There are rules against businesses storing your cards and automatically doing charges like that without your authentication. Right. Other countries, they could do whatever they want. Yeah. Cal, you had something to say?
What town do you live in?
We live in Sunfield, which is Eaton County.
Okay. If you have a local computer store in that town that you feel comfortable going to?
Yeah, through the phone company, yeah.
What about a store where you can go and buy a computer at? Do you have any local stores like that in town?
Well, Best Buy, ABC, you know, Staples.
If you
right here in town, but 15 minutes away, yeah.
If you want to look in your Yellow Pages or on the internet and see whether or not you can find a local independent computer store,
mm-hmm.
A lot of times they can be extremely helpful with you in recovering your data from that particular computer. And
mm-hmm.
also they can probably help you with maybe even buying a new computer in that particular case, just as well as the big box stores can. But the smaller independents can generally give you more customized service.
And they can get your data off and put it on your new computer.
Yeah, and they won't charge you. Hopefully they won't charge you an arm and a leg because they want your business.
Right.
You know, they want you to purchase a computer through them, and they'll work at recovering your data. I mean, I know places to remove viruses, they'll charge you $56. I mean, I drive by it every day on the way home. Little guy has a little about the size of a shed next to another building, and
right.
he has his own little computer company, and he says, I'll save your data, and I'll remove the viruses off your computers for $56.
Well, as I was telling my husband, I could buy a laptop, which he would have to learn how to do it, because he's not very good at all on the computer. But I would rather have a laptop because I also have Wi-Fi,
mm-hmm.
and I can then use it anywhere in the house.
That's right.
And he wants to keep replacing pieces, parts on that computer, and I think it's not worth it.
It's not. Because you can't, you know, you'd have to replace the bus. It would cost you too much.
I'd have to pay $100 now to get new security on it.
No,
you don't. There's free antivirus software out there.
Yeah.
Oh. I have that.
It'll come on your computer.
Avira,
yep, that's one of them.
Okay, and then I have...
So you're going to get, when you get a new computer, a new laptop, and we agree with you, that's what you should get,
uh-huh.
You'll be able to, it'll come with Microsoft's either 7.8.1, or if you wait a couple months, it'll come with 10.
What I was looking at, I believe, I could be wrong, 8.1.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you want
it's going to be a touchscreen. Yeah.
You want a touchscreen with that.
Which was $200. Well, yeah. In order to fix the old computer, I need a new modem then.
Yeah. Well,
and that's $300.
Well, I'll tell you what. Go out and buy that new computer. Give us a call back when you get it, and we can help you out with some of the other things.
Yeah, and hang on. We'll talk to you offline.
Yeah.
We're running out of time. We're going to have to take and go for tonight. We're going to be back next week on your local stations. And this is the Internet Advisor Show. Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, Cal Carson, and Foster Brown will be back next week. So we're here any weekend that you care to call us. If you're calling in on WJR, it's
1-800-859-0957 or 1-800-WJR. So we're looking forward to seeing you next week. Tune us in at the same time. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor, Detroit's longest-running, locally produced computer show with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and our team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or find show notes for this podcast or others, visit InternetAdvisor.net and look for us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.